Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the program. My name is Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. So glad you could tune in. Hang out with us for a while tonight. You never know what might happen. If you hear a wailing child at some point in the background, we have a three-year-old with a fever. Took her to the pediatrician today, and they swabbed her throat and said, we'll let you know in a day or so. Don't you hate it when your kids get sick? Or your nieces and nephews or your grandkids or whatever? A lot of weirdness going on with the Krongard brothers and Giuliani and Hillary. It's like, I don't know. It's like the Cosmic Muffin or Harry Thunderer, however you choose to define the cloud being, is having great sport with us here all of a sudden. Somebody sent me an email and said, I see that it rained after Sonny Perdue and a couple hundred people prayed. And I wrote back and said, yeah, but God is a selfish old fart, isn't he? I mean, we need 16 inches, and he sent us 0.014. The bad news of the day for me, other than the fact that, Kathy is already doing some Thanksgiving stuff, getting ready for a family and friend gathering here at the homestead. So I took Molly into town to the pediatrician, and she said, I forgot what I was going to say, Kathy. Damn. Anyway, Dr. I better not say her name. but the doc said, well, you know, there's stuff going around. Don't worry about it. Don't be a paranoid father. And other than that, you know, your kid's sick, you kind of focus on that. But other than Molly being sick, the story that really caught my attention today was the fact that Dick Wilson died. He was 91 or 92. Dick Wilson, you know who Dick Wilson was? Oh, you do. Oh, you saw the story. Dick Wilson was Mr. Whipple. Please don't squeeze the Charmin. You know, if the key words and phrase, or the two key words in advertising are repetition and irritation, and they are. Those are the key words for successful advertising, repetition, irritation. Mr. Whipple defined that, didn't he? When those commercials first came out, I thought, oh my God, what is this? And it was way back when, in the 70s? I think it was in the 70s. Yeah. So Mr. Whipple has died. Damn.
Yeah, that was one of the mantras of my childhood, was please don't squeeze the Charmin, that, and time to make the donuts.
That was another favorite of mine, the guy who played the donut maker for Dunkin' Donuts. I love that commercial. The character actor, I forget his name. And he went to the great donut machine in the sky a few years ago.
And don't forget, I can't believe I ate the whole thing.
Same guy.
That was the same guy?
Same guy.
Sounded like the same guy. It was?
Yeah.
He had a long career.
He did. Email from Beth.
So this has now become the most boring talk show in
sure.
America.
It is. It's Monday. Here's the schedule for this week. We're on tonight and tomorrow night, and then we're off Wednesday and Thursday, and then we'll be back Friday. So we're going to take off Wednesday to get ready for Thanksgiving, and Thursday, which is Thanksgiving, to hang out with friends and family and do the Thanksgiving thing in our own way. And then we'll be back Friday. So, yeah, it'll probably be very boring programs this week, right? And we'll be here over Christmas. We are not, and, well, we're going to leave after Christmas.
Yeah, we might as well just run it all down for them. We'll be off Christmas Eve and Christmas Day.
That's it.
Which are a Monday and a Tuesday.
Right, then we'll be here Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
And then we'll be here
Friday.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Then we're off the whole next week.
The whole next week.
Right, New Year's week.
Right, but we'll be here through Thanksgiving this week and through Christmas in a month.
Yeah, so our Christmas show this year will be the Friday before Christmas.
Right. Okay.
All right. Mark your calendars. It's important.
It'll be interesting with Molly this year. Email from Beth in Portland. Mike, I was walking through rainy Portland today. I like sentences that begin that way. Emails begin. It's like a story. It's like, oh, get a cup of coffee and sit down. Mike, I was walking through rainy Portland today and happened to pass by City Hall. A replica of the Liberty Bell is displayed on the lawn outside the building. So I walked over and stopped to ponder what such a thing means anymore. As you know, the original Liberty Bell was rung over Independence Hall before the first public reading of the Declaration of Independence. Standing in the rain, I thought about the Declaration of Independence, and that sinking feeling in my gut that I've been experiencing for the past 7 years became heavier still. People walked by me, talking on their cell phones, Blackberries and iPods, connected yet disconnected, directionless and lulled into thinking that this chunk of brass sitting in front of City Hall was just another memorial to a long-dead person or faraway place. After a while, I began to walk to my intended destination, which happened to bring me by the Federal Building. A few police cars were parked askew in front of it with their lights on, and several police officers were standing in front of it. I thought that it may have been a bomb scare, but then I saw that the police were standing around a woman. She was younger, carrying a sleeping child on her back, and holding a handmade cardboard sign that read, "Stop Terrorizing Immigrants." Because I can't help myself these days, I approach the scene and pick up some of what these police officers are saying to this woman. They are harassing her, making fun of her sign and her beliefs, whatever they may be, and telling her that she needs to get out from in front of the building. But isn't this the United States? Now I'm getting angry. I walk up to them and say, "Excuse me, just in case I want to protest here in the future, is it illegal to stand here?" "No," one red-faced officer said to me. "You just have to go to the second floor of this building here and ask to see the permits office. Pay a fee and get a permit first." "Okay," I say. "Let me get this straight. I need a permit to protest here?" "Yes, ma'am." "On federal property?" I ask. "Yes, ma'am, on federal property." I ask, "But tax dollars paid for this building, and tax dollars fund the salaries of the workers inside. I need a permit if I want to exercise my First Amendment rights." "It's federal property, ma'am." I look at the woman who's holding the sign and tell her to keep it up. I was then warned to leave unless I had business at the Federal Building. I don't care if that woman was a wackadoo or endorsing an 8-foot lizard for president. She has every right to stand wherever she wants and say it loud and clear. Or does she? Do any of us? The irony was outrageous. The Liberty Bell, not one block away, and, well, Jesus, I just don't know anymore. And impeachment is off the table. Have I mentioned how much I hate these people? Keep it lit. Beth in Portland. I was walking through rainy Portland today. Thanks, Beth. Someday some of you folks are going to be writing happy, cheerful emails about, "Hey, guess what? There was a big celebration today on the streets of Paducah, and people were just out dancing in the streets because we live in America, and we can think freely, and we can sing songs and dance and elect people who are real, honest to God leaders, and people who really want to improve the country, and like that." So anyway, that day will come, right? All right, let's do a break. When we come back, we shall carry on with the program, which is obvious, isn't it? This is Nova M Radio Network. I'm Mike Malloy.
You know the New York Times have told you lies. When they get caught, they give you 2 cents out of time. They don't worry about what makes you cry. Your child's in our right. Are they gonna die? Gasoline's in short supply. ExxonMobil is barely getting by. With millions in profits, it's just another lie. Hey, don't it make you red state?
Your host for a Pience Friance future, it's Mike Malloy.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those gnats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there.
21 past the hour. Music Factory wrote in, it was Jack Somack who said, I can't believe I ate the whole thing. Different guy. And Michael Vail who said, time to make the donuts. And the Music Factory who said, better dead than red. That's a whole different meaning from what I had back in the 50s or 60s or whatever. Sunday was the annual protest at the murderous School of the Americas here at Fort Benning down in Columbus, Georgia. Kucinich was there. He was the only presidential candidate of either party who joined thousands of protesters in the demonstration. The School of the Americas, of course, it's changed its name now. It back in 2001, because of the horrible truths that were rolling out about what this filthy, murderous institution had done, they changed their name to the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation. Whoa. If that doesn't sound like something out of the Soviet Union, I don't know what does. But it was formed, back in, in the 50s, 40s, 30s. It was in Panama, the country of Panama, until 1984. And then it moved to Fort Benning, Georgia. And then in 2001 changed its name. Now, these protests outside the gate of the fort, the military installation where this chamber of horrors is housed, the protests are timed to commemorate the murder of six Jesuit priests, their housekeeper and her daughter in El Salvador on November 19th, 1989. And the killers had attended the School of the Americas. The U.S. military has, over the, over the past 30 or 40 years, acknowledged that some graduates did go back home and commit abuses after attending the School of the Americas. But the military has always insisted there was no cause and effect relationship and that none had ever been established. Oh, God. School of the Americas has been banned now by several countries in South America that have, in the past 3 years, totally rejected the University of Chicago School of Neoliberal so-called economic policy, which also ties into Naomi Klein's disaster capitalism. These countries have said no. We are not going to be dictated to any longer for the benefit, ultimately, of American corporations or the American people, for that matter. There are our resources, our country, our monetary system, our banking system, our education system, our water supply, our natural resources, our jungles, our rivers, and the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund and these rapacious capitalistic vampires have had their fill. No more blood. No more blood from South America. And six or seven countries have made that declaration. Who was it that said, I just talked about this last week, was it Ecuador that said the one U.S. military base in that country will be shut when the lease runs out next year unless the Ecuadorians can open one in Miami? It's about time. You know, we talk about America. America is pretty much from the Canadian border south all the way to the tip of South America. There's Central America, with the exception of Mexico. There's Central America. It's all part of the Americas, though. And, whenever you write, I'm a citizen of America, that's, you know, kind of a misappropriated term. You're a citizen of the United States. But so much death and torture and destruction. This is where Negroponte, who I don't know if he's still in Pakistan as we speak, but he went to Pakistan to warn Musharraf, who apparently has given him the finger. So look for Musharraf to get dead fairly quickly. You don't not do what Negroponte orders you or your generals to do, or you wind up with your headless corpse laying in the street somewhere. Gift of a death squad put together by Negroponte. But Negroponte was based in Honduras and during the 80s, and it was there that he caused so much death and destruction of innocent people. Priests and nuns and social workers and villagers and natives and people that came from other countries to try to bring some kind of dignity and a lifting up to the people who had been living for generation upon generation, if not under the Spanish, then under the white people from North America. And Negroponte, I've said it before, I'll say it until I can't say it anymore, is drenched in blood. And School of the Americas was an institution that Negroponte saw as a wonderful place to teach people waterboarding. Forget waterboarding. What was taught there were very, very, very sophisticated and painful tortures. We'll be back in a minute. I'm Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
On the TV screen, hey buddy, I'm wanting you to turn it on. Oh, he's a ghost, he's a god, he's a man, he's a guru. You're one microscopic cog in his catastrophic plan, designed and directed by his red right hand.
Proof that fish and humans can coexist peacefully. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. So there were thousands and thousands of people. There was an estimate of 10,000 people in Columbus, Georgia, protesting the continuing operation of the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation, or as it's affectionately known, the torture training ground, the School of the Americas. Big picture in today's Journal Constitution of that demonstration. Dennis Kucinich was there, and he, like the demonstrators, contended that the changes at the school are only cosmetic. Of course, I mean, come on, you know, rat poison. If you change the name to cherry pie, is still rat poison, you know, and it will still kill you. Kucinich said in an interview that he'll continue lobbying for the closure of the school. And even if his candidacy for the presidency fails, but he said were he to be elected, the first thing he would be to close this filthy hole. The Reverend Roy Bourgeois, who is one of the leading lights of this protest and has been for decades, he is a Vietnam veteran, by the way. He spent 5 years as a missionary in Bolivia, and he founded the group back in 1990 of SOA Watch, School of the America Watch, SOA Watch. If you want to really get some information, do a search on soawatch.org. It's pretty frightening stuff. Bourgeois is a naval officer, or was a naval officer during the Vietnam War. I'm not sure how many people were arrested. I think less than 20 this time. They usually arrest old people, ex-nuns, or nuns who still maintain their vows, but they are not teaching or practicing any longer. They're retired. Two of Kathy's friends went down there to play the music, the Indigo Girls. They performed for the protesters. And Bourgeois, the naval officer during the Vietnam War, said, quote, "When they send us to prison, it energizes the movement," end quote. The School of the Assassins, not School of the Americas, School of the Assassins. so. Oh, White House spokesman Gordon Jandro declined to comment on the protest.
What's he going to say? Yeah, we agree. And this is the damnedest story. The lawyer for the State Department Inspector General, Cookie Krongard, the guy who committed perjury last week, his lawyer has now asked on Saturday that Cookie, remember, it's Cookie's brother, Buzzy. No, wait, have I got this backward? Which one? Let's see, Buzzy. Oh, God. Buzzy is on the board of Blackwater. Okay, Cookie. Cookie, Scooter.
Are these people or elves?
Buzzy.
Or dwarves, I mean.
Yeah, well, anyway.
Dopey, sneezy.
So Cookie's brother, Cookie's lawyer. Whew. Cookie is the State Department Inspector General. The top cop in the State Department. You know, they go to him for investigations. He was the one that was handed the Blackwater investigation about the propensity of the Blackwater employees to murder people just whenever they goddamn felt like it, and usually for sport. Turns out, though, as you know by now, that Cookie's brother Buzzy, Buzzy is on the board of Blackwater. I think I've got that right. I don't care. Don't email me if I have it wrong. Buzzy, Cookie, who cares? The interesting part is that the Inspector General Krongard, I guess I'll call him Cookie, asked on Saturday that he not be called back to testify before Congress on the lies that he told under oath once it was found out that his brother had already notified the committee and said, well, you know, he's a filthy liar. He doesn't want to be called back. And the attorney wrote in a letter to Henry Waxman the following, quote, "There's no legitimate purpose to be gained by publicly pitting two brothers against each other," end quote. What? There's no... Oh, my God. Well, Barbara, that's the lawyer. Barbara, here's a news flash for you. There's a hell of a lot to be gained to find out the depth of the corruption inside Blackwater that has sucked hundreds of millions of dollars out of American taxpayers' pockets to do what? Go play Soldier Boy and kill people. Hopefully Henry Waxman, who's the chair of that government oversight panel who's conducting this, will ignore this psycho attorney. Waxman's committee is examining allegations by current and former officials in Krongard's office that the inspector general stopped investigations into waste and fraud and abuse in Iraq, including arms smuggling by Blackwater. I mean, this Blackwater, when you have a license to kill with no repercussions, by executive order, you are safe from prosecution in Iraq. The Iraqis can't prosecute these rat bastards. The United States military can't prosecute them because they don't come under the Code of Military Justice. The U.S. State Department can't prosecute them because the murderers are happening on foreign soil. Authorities back in the United States can't prosecute these over-muscled, fully armed sons of bitches because, well, once again, the murders didn't happen here. So when you have a collection of rat bastards like this who can kill anyone they choose to kill without repercussions in a foreign country, I don't know, maybe there is some directive signed by Bush that you and I don't know about yet that gives them the right to kill people here without any sort of restriction or violating any law. Who knows? But when you have an organization that is set up to that extent for nothing other than murder, then you have an organization that is so close to the Nazi SS death squad as to render any differences meaningless. Absolutely meaningless. It becomes a question regarding the killings of scale and scope. Who was it that said, you know, one death is a tragedy, a million deaths is a statistic? Must have been Stalin or somebody. Don't send me the quote. So, Buzzy Krongard, the one who is on the board of Blackwater, is a former executive director of the CIA. Cookie Krongard is a former general counsel at the auditing firm of Deloitte & Touche, or Touch, or Touche, or whatever the hell it is. Being the former attorney for an accounting firm or an auditing firm certainly qualifies you to run investigations into international murder, torture, and mayhem. Of course. Of course. So I don't think I've ever heard this sort of a defense from someone who is charged with the kinds of crimes, criminal activity, that Cookie Krongard, the State Department Inspector General, is charged with. Obstruction of justice, perjury, assisting in the commission of God knows how many felonies, assisting in gun running, drug smuggling, closing down investigations, blasting whistleblowers, irrespective of the whistleblower protection laws, right out of the water. And this son of a bitch has the gall, Cookie, or is it Buzzy, to sit in front of the committee and say, well, I have no idea what my brother's doing. And meanwhile, the brother is saying, the hell he doesn't, I told him 6 weeks ago. He knows. Now, I'll be curious to see if, I don't think Henry Waxman will fold. Thank God the committee's not run by Nancy Pelosi. She would say, well, you know, you're probably right. It is a family thing, and we don't want to... But since it's run by Waxman, who was crapped on so many times when he was on this committee over the past 6 years, and the ranking member, ranking minority member, incident after incident, I don't see how Waxman was able to control himself and not have a nervous breakdown, or else go into the hearing one, at least once when he was on the minority side, fully armed, and just start, you know, putting holes in everything he could put holes in. I don't see. Oh, there I go again, projecting how I would react. Never mind. But Waxman, so far as I know, there's been no comment about this plea from Buzzy or Cookie's attorney. Buzzy, Cookie, Turd Blossom, Skipper, Kipper, Scooter, Chunky, Dookie, Sneezy, Dopey, Sleepy, Goofy. I mean, is this an administration or is it a bunch of people walking around in a fun park? No, don't answer that. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Cooling down, moving on from town to town. Well, they're standing in line at the welfare window, but the tape wrapped around the building, keeping him from moving on. Moving on from town to town. He's down now. Long.
Life's too short to listen to right-wing radio. It's more of Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, Ed in Sacramento writes, Mike, whenever I hear anyone mention the name Negroponte and or the School of the Americas, my blood runs absolutely cold. During the 80s, I was a firefighter serving in the U.S. Air Force, and I just managed to avoid temporary duty in Honduras, of all places, in the summer of 1989, just before I was discharged. My good friend Cliff was sent instead and spent 4 miserable months at Soto Cano Air Base, a major contra-staging area. The stories Cliff told me upon his return were, at the very least, chilling and horrible. Not to belabor anything, but hearing you say Negroponte triggered some sickening, blood-curdling recollections. Otherwise, loved the show, Mike. Keeping it lit in Sacramento, Ed. Thanks, Ed. Yeah, when Negroponte's name resurfaced in the Bush crime family, I forget how it resurfaced. What was it, Kathy? 2, 3, 4 years ago. It was... I don't know. It's like being forced to go back in and when you were a kid and rewatch a Saturday afternoon horror movie that you just saw and threw up your popcorn and left. Because in the 80s, his name was all over the place, and I never knew what happened to him. I had no idea. My hope was that some of the people, some of the farmers, some of the workers, some of the people in those countries that had been the victims of his death squads had somehow gotten a hold of him and sent pieces of him to all the different countries in Central America where his bloody work was carried out. Yeah, I know. That sounds sickening. I know. Talk show host talking about dismembering somebody. Yeah, I know.
You're just trying to get back on O'Reilly.
What a piece of human waste. Oh, my God. Let's see. Let's talk with Toby, who's in San Francisco listening on Green 960. We're not on right now, are we, Toby?
Oh, I guess we are.
No, I mean on the radio, on the old Quake. Are we still? Are we?
Yeah, we're on.
Oh, all right. Well, hi, Toby.
Oh, hi. How are you?
I'm fair to partly cloudy. How about you?
Got a couple of pains in the tush, you know.
Yeah.
calling for a couple of reasons.
Yeah.
I'll make it real quick, although that's rather hard, which is you should know what is one of my pains in the tush is. Do you realize that you and Randy Rhodes are both on simultaneously after your shows have already been done?
On what do you mean simultaneously? On two different stations in the Bay Area?
No, same station. You're on right now. Let me see. It's 6. It's almost 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
So I have you on the phone, and I have her on the radio.
Oh, my God!
And I'm not clever enough or Gentile enough to know how to do this.
How to do what?
How to listen to the two of you simultaneously.
You can't. You have to.
What else? You're both in the can.
You have to wait until later tonight, 11 o'clock, and I'll be...
I put diamonds and pearls to keep myself awake.
You get, well, okay, but
all
you...
All right, now, second of all, so the Air America, or as they call it, the Green...
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell's so green about it, if you ever saw their advertisements, but somebody needs to tell them over and over again, maybe they're listening.
Yeah.
That they should put you on live, so you're not on live, and Randy's not on live.
That's awful.
And last week, you were while you were doing your shtick,
yeah,
she was getting so freaked out about the impeachment. People were saying, oh, she's being Mike Malloyed. She's getting me. Everyone was calling, oh, you remind me of Mike Malloyed. I'm so happy. Now, that's a response to you and Kathy wondering why people weren't calling in.
I see.
Okay, and third of all, I want you should know that it started in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and this is in the 1984 Shell Station box. Yeah.
Okay.
Have you heard that they have, it's called Want Gas, Get Fingerprinted?
Want Gas, Get Fingerprinted?
You got it.
No, I haven't heard of that.
Okay, well, allow me to introduce you. I'll try to make it real quick.
You got a minute.
Go.
Chicago.
Drivers have a new way to pay for gasoline with their fingertips.
Oh, no.
AP story. 300 gas to Shell gas stations, including 10 in the Windy City, are testing biometric systems that the consumers walk up and scan their fingerprints. on a device.
Oh, my God.
And fill up their vehicles. Okay, cut to the chase here. The guy's name is Chris Seuss, as in Dr. Seuss.
Yeah.
He's in charge of global refueling, and people are wondering if perhaps there might be an issue of privacy, even though it is, after all, voluntary, you know, with this technological trifecta. So I just thought that you would like to know that that's going on. So the next time you decide to put your fingertips out, and it's not, and it's at a gas station.
Bay
is right.
That's astonishing. Fingertips.
I mean, this is already 3 weeks old. Nobody's covered it, but after all, since the media and this and that. In the meantime, I'll go back to trying to listen to the both of you and screaming at the Green Air America that they should have you both live.
You go, Toby. With an ally like you in San Francisco, Randy and I will both win. Thank you, dear heart. Take care, Toby. What'd she say? She's not Gentile enough to listen to both of us at the same time.
Watch your fingertips.
I hear that. All right, stay with us. More conversation and your phone calls and a couple other topics I want to throw in here when we come back. This is Nova M Radio. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. I got an email here that says, let me see here. You can listen at the same time. Who sent this to us here? Kathy from Diane? KPIX, the Valley Progressive. I'm not familiar with that station. Is that in San Francisco? 1480, listen to you on the internet and Randy at the same time. She has, yeah, I realize the Valley's Progressive Talk is at 14. Okay, but she's got KPIX. My bad. I thought Diane was referring to a station in the Bay Area. Okay, well, I think that what Diane is trying to say is just log on to KPHX. Website, listen to Buzzy, Cookie.
I think Toby is listening to the tiny transmitter in her head.
No. Toby's going to climb through this radio station and whip your ass for saying that.
Yes, oh, but my God. Which one of me is talking?
Yeah, I know. It's okay. Fran Townsend resigned today. She's a... I've seen her on television. Oh, you talk about somebody who just grated on my nerves even more than Karl Rove did. She was a senior advisor to Bush on counterterrorism and domestic security. And every time she opened her mouth, what she was there to do is to fill a slot. She had nothing, no experience, nothing. I don't care what she did prior to... joining the Bush crime family. In her resignation letter, she said she was going to go back to the private sector, of course. And she said in her resignation letter, as you know, it is with a profound sense of gratitude that I have decided to take a respite from public service. A respite? Oh, God!
In a statement that was written for him, obviously, Bush said that Townsend, quote, has always provided wise counsel on how to best protect the American people from the threat of terrorism. Sure she has. Bush went on to say, reading from whatever someone wrote for him, she has been a steady leader in the effort to prevent and disrupt attacks and to better respond to natural disasters. Oh, yes. I can name a couple that she probably really responded well to. Attacks. We're under attack. Townsend served 4.5 years in a post created after September 11th, 2001. She had also been a prosecutor in New York. God, I would hate to be charged with anything jaywalking and face her. She would probably ask for life. And here's the letter that she sent, a handwritten note. It's all over the place on the internet. Dear Mr. President, as you know, it is with a profound sense of gratitude, but a heavy heart, that I've decided to take a respite from public service. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to serve at the White House. My time here and every day of my nearly 23 years of public service have been both a blessing and a privilege. In 1937, the playwright Maxwell Anderson wrote of President George Washington, quote, there are some men who lift the age they inherit till all men walk on higher ground in their lifetime, end quote. Mr. President, you are such a man. And so it has been an honor to serve by your side in this interesting moment in our nation's history. May God bless you and all those who serve, and may he continue to bless our great nation. Regards, Fran Townsend. Now, on Oberman's program tonight, there was a bit of provocative thought on Keith's part as to the sentence, Mr. President, you are such a man. Is the emphasis in that sentence on the pronoun you, or on the other word, such? Mr. President, you are such a man, as George Washington. Or, Mr. President, you are such a man. Which is it? You know, I hate these fawning, moist, cloying, faintly sexual little reminiscences that come to Bush from Harriet Myers and Condoleezza Rice and Karen Hughes, Fran Townsend. I mean, the list just goes on and on, don't they? Mr. President, you are such a man. What is it? What is it in the mind of someone who can declare George Bush to be on a level with George Washington, or on a level with any president of any country at any time in any nation's history? This guy is a thug, Fran! He's a murderer! He's a dumbass! He's vicious, hateful, stupid, unresolved, drunk, and a drug user!
Oh, well, if you're gonna split hairs, Mr. Malloy...
How does he do that? What is it the flight suit?
Hey, I just flew in here, landed on this aircraft carrier. Mission accomplished. Hey, I'm a war president. Hey, I'm tough. Hey.
The phone number here is 800-989-1480. Jump in. We'll take your call. Matthew is calling from Bedford, Texas. Matthew, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
It's going all right, Matthew. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm hanging in there.
Oh, well, that's good.
I've been kind of rifling through my brain, and I guess it just got to the point where I thought, you know, it's about that time I figure I might as well call Mike Malloy and brighten his day.
Oh, good. Well, I've been looking forward to this for sure.
Well, okay. So, anyway, apart from rifling through my brain, I've also been rifling through some old family video collections. And
yeah.
I knew my aunt lived in Atlanta from about 1970-something to about 1995. And whenever I was born, we'd go visit her for around the holidays. And So anyway, I was going through one of the videos. Now, this is between 1989 and about 1993, back when I was cute. And we were just kind of sitting in the living room, and my aunt had the radio on. Yeah. And she used to listen to various talk show hosts, and I was just kind of listening to the background noise because, you know, I was just, you know, kind of uninterested in what else was going on.
Right.
And I heard a voice.
You heard a voice.
A fairly interesting voice whom I recognized but cannot put my finger on.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, I guess it was right in the break, you know, it was right at the end of the segment, and I heard Mike Malloy.
Oh, no.
And so I just it kind of clicked because I also remembered loving a particular host that would make funny voices. See, back then, that's why I liked you. You made funny voices. And so, you know, like whenever, I guess when you would imitate people or something. And so, you know, whenever I was in the young old days and I would listen to IE America back when I was 12, 13, 14,
uh-huh.
You know, that's why I liked you.
Right.
And so I just thought I'd tell you, I've pretty much, I guess, been listening to you without even knowing it almost my whole life.
Oh, my God.
And that's pretty scary because I've been kind of calling you most of my intelligent life. So.
Yeah, that's true. You've spent an awful lot of time on the air with us, haven't you, Matthew?
Yeah, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, though. But anyway, I was actually thinking about it, and I would like to kind of put out a call. I know on White Rose Society, they do have one recording of you way back when, but I'm wondering if other people, I mean, if somewhere there are, you know, recordings of you back in the good old days, in the 90s, before the Bush madness, during the Clinton years. You know, I mean, it's really interesting, and I'd really like to kind of, you know, see what you were talking about before then, because while I got to only listen to you a couple days out of the year, because that's when I was around Chicago and Atlanta and that sort of thing, so,
yeah.
You know, I really like...
All right, I'll tell you what, Matthew, I got a break here, but keep listening, and I will tell you some ancient recordings that were probably made right around the time you were born. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's more Mike Malloy.
I was born like this. I had no choice. I was born with the gift of a golden voice. And 27 angels from the great beyond.
21 past the hour. I guess you've heard, here's another one, this one from Russia, 29 members of a doomsday cult in that country, holed up in a cave, threatening to blow themselves up with drums of gasoline if authorities try to force them out. CNN correspondent Matthew Chance reported on this. I guess they got Matthew out of the war zone and sent him over here for some R&R, and he found this story. He says, the dozens of religious zealots are living in freezing conditions waiting for the end of the world. They believe it will come in the spring and are reported to have hoarded enough supplies to last them until then, including fuel and blankets and half a ton of honey and jam. Most of those in the cave are women. And there are also four children with them. They've refused to speak with Russian Orthodox monks who were sent to try to negotiate and say they only want to be left alone. The leader of the cult is a man, Pyotr Kuznetsov. He did not join his followers and is now in police custody. He's not in the cave. Undergoing psychiatric evaluation, Kuznetsov, who declared himself a prophet several years ago, doesn't allow cult members to watch television, handle money, eat food stamped with the universal product code, which is it all we all know is the mark of the Antichrist. So here we go again. Only to have children in a situation like that is really criminal. Yeah, David Koresh, I know what you're thinking. Oh my. Chet is calling from Chicago, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Chet, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, good to talk to you again. It's been a while.
It has
indeed. I just wanted to bring up the most recent atrocity by the so-called liberal media.
Okay.
The hiring of Karl Rove as a regular columnist by Newsweek.
Oh,
could anything be more absurd?
And you know what they did to make it less vomit-inducing? They also hired, I can never say his name, the guy who runs Daily Kos. They're going to take turns. But that's supposed to ease the pain of having this little Nazi brown shirt. Rove never would have made it to the elite SS guard. He would have been the brown shirts, the ones that got purged after Hitler came to power. You know, the brown shirts were the ones who went around beating up on helpless old ladies and Jewish school children.
Right.
So.
And breaking shop glass windows.
Yeah, that would be Rove, yeah.
But I think Karl Rovesteiner, which I believe is the original family name.
Yeah.
I think he would have insinuated his way into Goebbels' propaganda department. He would have escaped the knife. He's that devious. Here's my point.
Sure.
Is that the guy from the Daily Kos has never been under any suspicion of causing mayhem to our constitutional system and our Bill of Rights.
Right.
You and I could talk about the depravities that Rove has committed over the 30 years of his career. We could just boil it down to this last thing, that he tried to ruin how many U.S. attorneys in last year's election.
Sure.
And pervert the Justice Department. And that alone should keep him out of the mix. You know, he's not a legitimate conservative spokesman.
Yeah. I agree. And especially Newsweek, which is owned by the Washington Post Company. But they also, are you being invaded, Bob? I mean, Chet?
Unfortunately, I'm at work. Sorry about that.
Oh, okay. There are little munchkins running around inside your vehicle there or whatever, or wherever you are. You know? Be careful, because they probably have death rays.
Three Edward, please.
That's not a Three Edward. Well, Chet, I know you told me one time, what is it you do?
Well, at the moment, I really can't talk about it.
Oh, okay.
It would be... In fact, I better let you continue on the air.
All right.
I'll have to say goodbye.
Yeah, okay. Ooh. All righty, Chet. Or whatever your name is.
This is one of the strangest nights we've had on the air so far.
It is. You want to make it stranger? Watch this. Bob is calling from Tennessee. Bob, welcome to the program. How you doing, Bob?
Oh, just fine, Mike, I guess. I've been up and down on a roller coaster.
Yeah.
Get up to anger and down to depression. That's all I can handle.
And with a little anxiety sprinkled in there, too.
Oh, yeah.
Makes a hell of a psychic sandwich, doesn't it?
I know, man. Say, my KPA checks.
Hold on a second, Bob. I took you right at the wrong time. Stay right there. We'll pick you up on the other side of this break. You want to join in the merriment tonight? Give us a call, 800-989-1480. What's that station in the valley, the progressive KP? Huh. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
You made the right. You may be wrong, but you may be right. You may be wrong, but you...
And now a soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malone.
25 before the hour. Before we go back to Bob the poet here, Andre wrote in about the woman who has resigned. What's her name? The one who used to work as Frances, who? Townsend? And, Andre writes, regarding her statement that she wanted a respite from public service, Andre writes, that's funny, since the government has been totally privatized. Public service? She serves the president, not the public. The Republicans have stolen our country. Yeah, I didn't think about that. Let me get out of the government sector, back into private, you know, where I can rip off with maybe less impunity, but I can go home at night. I don't know. To hell with it. Bob in Tennessee, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. All right, where were we?
Well, I was just going to tell you that when I became a founding member, I surprisingly received a nice gift in the mail. I got a book that I enjoyed and a T-shirt. And I wore the T-shirt to, I play with a band, and I wore the T-shirt one night to a party we played at.
Yeah.
And it was quite a hit. Have you seen those T-shirts?
No. What do they say?
On the back, it says, torture, eavesdropping, and there are a whole list of crimes, and then it says, we need to talk.
We need to talk. that's what it says on the front?
That's what it says on the back. On the front, it says KPHX in the Valley or whatever.
People wondered why
I had this Phoenix T-shirt on, but...
Well, that's the reason. That's very good. That's good. That's great. All right, you got a poet for us?
No, I didn't bring a poem tonight.
All right.
Actually, I called because Toby mentioned Randy.
Yeah, Randy Rhoads.
And I got a little upset last Friday on listening to her. I think it was Friday, might have been Thursday. She repeated an often stated liberal that the poor commit more crimes, and that is so totally false. The crime statistics in the United States are warped, just like the justice system is racist and classist. The crime statistics are warped.
Mm-hmm.
When someone steals a car, that's listed as a crime. When someone steals a television, that's listed as one crime.
Right.
When someone steals everybody's pension at Enron, that's listed as one crime.
Right, I get your point. Yeah.
But that's a crime against 1,500 people.
Yeah.
When somebody poisons 10,000, 20,000 in Bhopal, that's one crime.
All right. Now, did you call her and tell her this?
No, because Ms. Hipple, for some reason, doesn't seem to want me on the air with her.
Miss what?
Her call screener.
Oh, her caller is named what?
Ms. Hipple, I think it is.
Hipple?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Well, send her an email, because Randy needs to know this. You make a very good point, and like me, I would not. Randy would not have thought that through. When you said that, I thought, well, you know, I don't know what Bob's quoting now, but that can't be right. And then when you explain it, all of a sudden it comes crystal clear.
Well, Tyco. Global
crime. Oh, no. I get your point. I get your point. But I think in all fairness to Randy, I'd let her know, because I'll use that now. I will use the information you just gave me, and I'm sure Randy would too. So send her an email. If Ms. Hipple won't let you on the air, send her an email. Bob, I got to go. Thanks a lot, pal.
All right, talk to you later.
Appreciate you checking in. Ms. Hipple? I don't know. I have no idea.
I thought that was a surgical procedure.
I thought so, too, but apparently not. Rose is calling from Fortuna, California, listening via the Internet. Hey, Rose.
Hi, Mike. I heard you say that you listened to Keith Olbermann this evening.
Yes, I did.
And I was wondering if you heard that the left end of the party has no place to go so tough from the gentleman that was
I may
there.
Have missed that. I usually don't. I don't get to Olbermann's program until about 20 past the hour, because I'm telling Molly stories and trying to get her to sleep before we have to go on the air. So I probably missed that part.
Well, it's the gentleman that used to work for the United States Senate, and then he got real popular on TV as a writer, I think, or producer. I've forgotten his name. But anyway, he was the first guest on Olbermann tonight, and they were talking about, he was making excuses for Clinton, which is fine. This is right. That her feelings regarding what the Senate can and cannot do is very logical and very correct.
Mm-hmm.
And, her explanations were quite correct, and we're all to accept it and be happy with it. Olbermann implied something to the effect, well, what if there are other people who are not happy, about that end of the party?
Right.
Well, his answer was that he'd spent 7 years on the Hill and in a lot of Senate meetings, and he was told time and again that the left could just go to hell. They have no place to go. And I find that very sad.
I do too. Yeah.
That attitude is so prevalent. And, to the extent that they don't have any need even to try to cover it up. I mean, the man was pretty blatant. I got the message,
mm-hmm.
Being from the left end of the party. And thank you very much, sir.
Yeah, really.
And so I thought it was kind of interesting. And so I was wondering, Mike, do you have any suggestions where else we can go besides straight to hell, from our leaders in the Democratic Party? Do you have any other suggestions for us?
We have to purge the party. We have got to get people in leadership positions in Congress, in the Democratic Party, and those in the Democratic National Committee and the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee and all these different committees who are real liberals. And all this talk about how, the party faithful don't want that. The party has got to be in the center. I get so sick of that. Nobody in the Republican Party ever said that their party had to be in the center. They always went for the extreme points of their ideology, which is Nazism. I say go for the extreme points of the liberal or the Democratic ideology, which is a fair shake and fair play for everybody. Decency, honor, justice, peace. That's the extreme position in the Democratic Party. The extreme position in the Republican Party, like I said, is Nazism. So we need new leaders, and we need new leaders in Congress and new leaders outside of Congress, Rose. That's my qualified opinion.
Well, I'm going to keep right on listening to you, and in case you get a real brainstorm as any suggestions where else we can go, I'm going to be listening.
All right. Thanks,
thanks a lot.
All right.
Mike.
Take care, Rose. Uh-huh. I appreciate you checking in. The U.S. military is, for some reason, is touting the drop in violence in, I don't know if it's in Iraq or if it's in Baghdad. And I guess the implication is the surge is working. Actually, the truth is, Baghdad and possibly other sections of Iraq, other cities in Iraq, the purging is just about over, and they have become areas that are sealed off from each other. This is not a country as you and I would know it. The militias in these areas have firm control. You have various segments and factions within the Sunni and the Shiite communities, and that probably is reducing some of the violence. But on the very day that it was announced that attacks and attempted attacks across Iraq had dipped to the lowest point for any week since January of last year, this guy, he's a rear admiral, don't ask me why, Gregory Smith, he made the announcement at a news conference in Baghdad. And even as officials were announcing the figures, Iraq had one of its deadliest days in weeks, 22 people killed in attacks nationwide. And, of course, 2007 has been the bloodiest year for American casualties. I think American soldiers, the death count is over 830, 840. But in this attack, even as these U.S. officials are talking, 9 civilians were killed and 20 people wounded in Karada, a mixed neighborhood in central Baghdad. 3 children were killed and 7 more were wounded in Bakuba to the north in an explosion in a small garden where American soldiers were handing out candy and soccer balls and ballpoint pens. And 3 American soldiers also were killed, I believe, in that attack. When I see something like that, And I wonder why we're there. It was a suicide bomber detonating his vest as American soldiers were handing out toys to children. I mean, what kind of a person does that? And I've said this before. I don't care if it's shelling. You know, dropping bombs, white phosphorus on children, burning them alive, or somebody blowing up a bus in Haifa, or somebody shelling a village in Gaza, or someone setting off a suicide bomb in Baghdad, and kids are blown into red mist. I God damn them all these people who do this sort of thing. Just, we'll be right back.
The man conservatives love to hate, it's Mike Malloy.
Let that play. Is that the good, the bad, and the karmic? What is that? Is that Jan Hammer? It sounds just like the good, the bad, and the karmic. 10 before the hour. I guess one of the reasons that Negroponte is in Pakistan, in addition to setting up death squads and killing people, there is a new and still classified, it was carried in the New York Times today, a U.S. military proposal outlining an effort to enlist tribal leaders in the frontier areas of Pakistan in the fight against Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. And if adopted, the proposal would expand the presence of American military trainers in Pakistan. Remember Vietnam? I know a lot of you are too young. I remember when we were sending advisors. Hell, some of that was before my time even. But Eisenhower sent some advisors, and Kennedy expanded the advisors. They were not combat forces, although they were combat forces. So now we're here we go again. We're going to send some military trainers, American soldiers. Now, the fact that they're military means it's not going to be Blackwater, not here at the beginning. Blackwater's all over Afghanistan, of course, like white on rice. But so we're going to send troops. This will be this will be the third country where we have U.S. military troops fighting. Right now, we've got about 50 troops in Pakistan, according to a Pentagon spokesman, a force that could grow under the new approach. I like to say could grow by dozens under the new approach. Yeah, okay. The Pakistan dictator, I don't know why the Times refers to him as the Pakistani president. He's the dictator, Pervez Musharraf. Said on Sunday that he wants parliamentary elections on January 8th, even though he has, you know, still has his emergency rule in place, which is a polite way of saying martial law. But I don't know. This is so bizarre. They're going to be called, I guess, the Frontier Corps. The Frontier Corps is what this this group of U.S.-trained Pakistani soldiers is to be called, or is that our people? You know, historically, U.S. Special Forces have gone into different countries to work with local militaries to raise all kinds of hell and destabilize governments, overthrow regimes, kill people, murder, just do all kinds of evil stuff. And we do it, and the reason it's evil is because we sneak in and do it in order to overthrow government. We don't overthrow governments in order to establish liberty and freedom. We overthrow governments in order to strengthen the control of U.S. corporations. That has been our position for the past 120 years, and anyone who tells you otherwise is a goddamn fool or thinks you are. So we have been sending, you know, Smedley Butler wrote about this 100 years ago. We have been sending special forces into foreign countries to murder and kill and terrify and terrorize. Can you imagine for a moment if, I don't know who, China, Russia, Venezuela, Cuba, were to send special forces into the United States to work with local militia groups in this country who don't like the federal government? Can you imagine? I mean, it would convulse this country utterly and absolutely. We would go nuts. The government, I don't care if it's Democrat or Republican, would just start frothing at the mouth. There would be declarations of war. We would launch aircraft loaded with nuclear weapons. We might not drop them or launch them, but we would launch the airplanes, the aircraft. So that's what would happen. Can you imagine if 25 or 30 Chinese special forces landed on some remote beach in the Florida Panhandle and worked their way up to New Orleans and started organizing people who were very pissed off and rightly so at the U.S. government to form death squads and hit teams? Can you imagine this? And yet this is what we do. This is what we do. It's incredible. Small numbers of the U.S. military have served as advisors to the Pakistani army in the tribal areas, giving planning advice and helping to integrate American intelligence. The language that they use, as if our people are on some sort of a righteous mission. We are not on a righteous mission. We are seeking to secure that part of the world for global energy corporations, period, end of story. End of that part of the story. It's just insane. What would happen if Cuba were to... Look, there are people in Miami who, given a chance, would assassinate Fidel Castro in a heartbeat. They are burning incense and candles in front of their little statuettes of the Mother of Christ, praying for his death, praying that Jesus will cast him into hell. How many operations have been launched from U.S. soil against Castro in the past 40 years, 50 years. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. But let Castro send 15 or 20 commandos into this country to blow up a couple of power plants? Son of a bitch! Cuba would turn into glass within 24 hours, and it wouldn't make any difference how many millions of people we blew into red mist. And yet, we do this on a regular basis. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy.
drunk in the midnight quiet. I have tried in my way to be free. Like a fish on a hook, like a knife from an old-fashioned book.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Seven past the hour. Just watching weather guy on CNN with his report on airplane flights. Oh my God. You know, I've never experienced a delay. I don't know why. I've just always been lucky with flights like that. But and Atlanta being the hub that it is, we expect just uncounted numbers of people coming through here. I think Sunday is a big travel day this year, and also tomorrow. Wednesday, millions of people coming through the Atlanta airport. And when you think of the delays that are going to happen and how many flights are going to be canceled, and it's horrifying. How do we get to this point? And what's being done about it? Even Chuckle Nuts comes out today or the other day and said something about, oh, yeah, like, here, go read this, George. Okay. My God. All right, back to your phone calls. John is calling from Oakland, California, and listens on Green 960. Hey, John.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for doing what you do.
Well, thanks for your contribution.
Yeah, and for the way that you do it. It occurred to me when I listen to you that sometimes I feel like in the middle of a Shakespearean play or operatic tragedy.
Yeah.
Like, say, Pagliacci. With Bush's Pagliacci, the clown.
Yeah, right.
And it also occurred to me that Machiavelli could not have written a more sinister play than what we have now with George Bush and his crime family.
Oh, it's like something written by a Russian novelist. If this were written, there's a Russian novelist. I don't know how many people are familiar with him, Mikhail Bulgakov, who wrote among other things. What was that one I loved, Kathy? The Devil, the Master and Margarita. The Master and Margarita. And Bulgakov wrote during the 20s and 30s, and therefore he had to be very careful. This is during the time of the Stalinist purges, and they hated artists, they hated writers, they hated poets. And unless your work was politically correct in a very profound way, your ass would be either executed or sent off to a slave labor camp. So Bulgakov used to, in The Master and Margarita, he wrote attacking the Soviet regime and the Soviet Communist Party, but he did it in a way that the dumbass members of the Politburo couldn't understand.
And this is what period of time?
This is in the 20s and 30s during the Great Purges, the Stalinist purges in Russia. But if you ever get a chance to read this guy, Mikhail Bulgakov, and the book I recommend, there were several that I found just phenomenal. And he's one of the Russian writers that most of us Americans are not really familiar with. We're familiar with, you know, with Tolstoy and the rest of the, you know, the ones that wrote the big, ponderous novels. Bulgakov didn't do that. And he used humor and supernatural, almost like Stephen King kind of writing, in the 20s and 30s to go after the Soviet leadership. And when I think about a novelist writing something about this filthy Bush administration, given the times, I would God, you know, it was 100 years ago, but I can imagine Bulgakov taking on this Russian regime, or
yeah,
this American, this American regime, incredible.
Yeah, what I called about though was that you talked about Keith Olbermann stealing your thoughts, and actually,
well, we're on the same page so many nights. It's really funny. Yeah.
Well, I had copied a famous paragraph from Mario Savio's speech a week and a half ago, and was going to call you about this, and then you read it.
Well, which was that?
This. Speech from Mario Savio is
the one about there comes a time when you have to throw yourself
right
into the gears of the machine. Yeah,
and actually, I would like to know if I could water the consciousness of your listeners with it once again.
Sure, go ahead, say it again.
Okay, there is a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you are free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I wanted to say that Code Pink is a modern-day embodiment of what he talked about, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the rock band Rage Against the Machine got their inspiration from Mario Savio, even though they are... you know, Savio would be, let's see, he was in 63 and 64.
Right.
Which is like, what is that, 40 years ago?
100 years ago.
Yeah. He was I think, a grad student at UC Berkeley. But Rage Against the Machine, hell, most of the players in that group weren't even born then. But that's where the
what
name...
What song do they have now?
They have a bunch of CDs out. I don't know what they've got out now. But they borrowed the name of their band from what Savio said. So I've been told. I don't know if that's true or not.
But
so I've been told.
But Code Pink deserves our support, especially since, you know, if you remember, George Bush came out against them.
Mm-hmm.
He apparently sees them as some kind of enemy of the state, of his state.
Right, enemy of the state. God, I love being an enemy of the state, don't you?
Yeah, I probably am.
All right, John, thanks a lot, man.
Okay.
All right, I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Mario Savio, oh my God. 43 years ago. The Savio's doppelganger, of course, was Ronald Reagan, who I believe at the time or shortly after was the governor of California, and he used to rail against the free speech liberals at University of California, Berkeley, and Mario Savio especially. Oh, God. Bob is calling from Seattle, listening on the Internet. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Mike. Neat story before the break. Negroponte death squads in Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
One more time.
Yes.
And I was just thinking, you know, I send you lots of depressing stuff.
Yeah. I try to read as much of your stuff as I can on the air. But this is Bob from superbeans.com, whose company I am now doing commercials for. Because I love the coffee. I try to read as much of your stuff as I can on the air. But, man, you're like a novelist. You need to, and seriously, you need to sit down and go ahead, and it doesn't have to be fiction if you don't want to, but you need to get this stuff in long form and get it published. You're a very good writer.
Oh, I'm desperately trying to get everything done to 300 words at a time.
Well, you're not succeeding.
No, concision has eluded me.
Yeah, it has.
But I was thinking today, I was looking over the stuff that I was sending. I was like, God, you know, he must think that I'm just a really depressive freak in a garage someplace.
No. You're not. The stuff you write and that I read on the air are the stuff I don't read on the air. You're not depressive at all. I mean, you know, this is love in the time of cholera. What are we supposed to do? You know, what are you supposed to see? What are we supposed to do? Just like the last caller talking about Code Pink, what are they supposed to do? Sit around and knit booties for war orphans, which is not a bad thing to do, but better they throw their bodies into this filthy machine. So, you know.
Well, last week I emailed you about hope or lack thereof.
Yeah.
And I thought,
yeah, that was an uplifting email.
I was thinking, because before we, my wife and I were talking about having the little guy, about, you know, is this a good time? And it is never
right.
A good time.
No, it never is.
And so I don't know if this is indicative of anything or not, but a couple years ago, he was probably about 4 or 5.
Hold that thought, because I'm in 7 seconds, I got to go to a
break.
The
break is happening.
Yeah, and let me do the break, and we'll come back to Bob, because I don't want to get you into that story and have to say, Bob, hold on a second.
Okay.
So we'll come back after the
break.
I'll
bookmark.
All right, stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
But she's wearing something tight. And I lift my glass to the awful truth, which can't reveal to the ears of you, except to say it isn't worth a damn. And the whole damn place goes crazy twice in
it's once for the devil and it's once for Christ. By the Boston light, these dizzy heights will bust it in the blinding lights of closing time. The whole damn place goes crazy twice, and it's once for the devil and it's once for Christ. But the Boston light, these dizzy heights will bust it in the blinding lights.
I'm Jorge, too. That means George.
I'm Jorge, too. That means George. There's another one of those 18-minute long Pink Floyd songs, right? We're talking with Bob in Seattle. Bob, where were we? That's right. You were about to tell us a story about your four-year-old.
He's seven now.
Oh, he's seven now. That's right. Yeah. When he was four?
Yeah. I was just thinking, and I said, hey, come here, guys. I want to do an experiment.
Uh-huh.
So he came over, and our dog came over, and they sat, and they were looking at me. And I made a motion as if I were going to hit them.
Mm-hmm.
And I obviously didn't. And they just looked at me like, what's the program, Pop? What you doing? And then I realized the reason they didn't flinch is because they had no fear. That had never, ever happened to them. And so this might not be indicative of anything except me turning into a metaphysical sap, but I thought, okay, if you have kids and they are raised for as long as possible without fear mm-hmm. being inoculated via the parents, then they'll grow up without it and maybe think of freedom of fear as being their birthright. And maybe that's the solution, obviously, in geological time
mm-hmm.
to the situation that we're in now. I have no hope for short term at all.
No, maybe.
But long term, that's where I get it. It's mm-hmm. based on no empirical data.
Well, I think, you know, you make a very salient point, and I think that point has been made by child developmental specialists over the course of, what, the past 500 years or so, that, all right, the past 50 years, that if you don't beat your kids, if you don't curse them, if you don't this, if you don't that, it's a whole different and much healthier mindset. They grow up believing in themselves and believing in their intrinsic power. And at the same time, if you can kind of convince a kid, and I've tried, I don't know how successful I've been with my grown kids, and I don't know how much time I'll have to try to teach this to Molly, but you then teach them how their own power of self, how on its own, okay, you might discover a cure for cancer or learn how to skydive, but if you really want to make it work, your fearlessness and your power, hook up with five people and then 55 people and
right.
then 555 people and keep going until you develop just by the force of righteousness, I guess, a movement and things change. So, you know, that's kind of what I base what little shreds and threads of hope that I still have left, Bob, is on the fact that that can happen if the kids that are working on this now, either without their knowledge or because they're five or seven or nine, or with their knowledge because they're teenagers, they're working on this and they're going, you know, there's a level here. There's a way to do this. There's a way to join up. You know, I hope that's happening.
Well, I just thought if someone were raised without fear and they thought it was
sure,
they deserved it by their birth, simply inalienable rights, the freedom of fear. If anybody tried to instill fear in them, they'd just get laughed at. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that is one of the four freedoms that Roosevelt talked about, right? Freedom from fear. Yeah.
I just think maybe if everybody collectively laughed at Bush at all, maybe they'd slink away for another decade or so before they came out of their casket again.
Right. One can hope. Bob,
yeah.
Thanks a lot, man.
Talk to you later.
All right. Appreciate it. Take care. What's the date today? Is this the night? No, what's the date today? The 19th? Oh, okay. Well, I guess this is one of Bob's missives today. I think I got a couple from him. You're right, Mike. There's no argument the face this country shows to the rest of the world is one of avaricious imperialism. The list of overthrown, legitimately elected governments, subverted elections, assassinations, puppet governments installed, and dictators upheld with U.S.-trained death squads goes on and on. Dark facts from America's dark history. We know that our government secret agencies have overthrown governments, subverted elections, and assassinated at will outside our borders. But what sort of magical thinking are we in thrall of when we believe they wouldn't do such things inside our borders? Maybe what we are seeing, what I initially thought was full-blown fascism, is simply the imperialistic face of America looking upon us. Maybe we've seen glimpses of this face in Dallas 44 years ago, in Memphis with the King assassination, and in Los Angeles when RFK was eliminated 39 years ago, and in our last two stolen elections. There. I've creeped myself out again for another day. Bob. Yeah. And by the way, how many are aware? I just got an email. Thanksgiving this year is on the day. The 22nd. The day of the Kennedy assassination. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Mola. This is Nova M Radio.
That you can live by and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they fix, the one you'll know by.
Flying monkey right blues, here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
We were young together, we were on the ball. We did not believe in the writing on the wall. We did our best work.
25 before the hour. Gene in Santa Rosa emailed me over the weekend. Mike, recently you read a letter from a woman who has started a postcard campaign to protest the behavior of Bush and his criminal regime. I haven't been able to stop thinking about it since it is brilliant in its simplicity. Today, I think I came up with the image I would like to use. On the front, a picture of The Hague. On the back, you need a little blurb about The Hague to inform the nosy. The message would be simple. Wish you were here, or wish you were there. It might be too subtle for chuckle nuts, but the idea we've planted in the minds of everyone who handles the postcard. Gene in Santa Rosa, that's a good idea. Yeah. All right, back to your phone calls. Tim is calling from Phoenix, listening on KPHX. Hey, Tim, welcome to the program. Hey, Tim.
Oh, hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Sorry about that. I wanted to give you a call because I'm a frequent listener of your show and other shows here in the Phoenix metro area as well as other stations.
Uh-huh.
I was really bothered by what you said about the special operations element of the Army. Only one reason is I served 10 years underneath that umbrella, and I did that honorably. And I know of nothing as far as death squads and hit teams to be going out. Mm-hmm. And,
well, they kept you immunized from it since you weren't going to be part of it.
They kept me immunized. I was raised in a military family, and I'm a very cerebral person, very educated, well educated, intelligent. I'm also a high school teacher.
Okay, well, let me ask you: Are you saying, Tim, that such things don't exist, or that special forces have never been involved in operations of destabilization, overthrowing of governments, murder. Have you ever heard of Operation Phoenix during Vietnam? If you haven't, do a Google search and see what you come up with.
No, I'm aware of the elements of Operation Phoenix. My dad was a LERP in Vietnam.
Okay, what would you call Operation Phoenix?
I would call it a destabilization exercise.
How about that's a polite way of saying it was teams put into the field going into villages in Vietnam to wreak nothing but absolute and utter terror and horror. It was death and destruction. It was the murder of the village leaders. It was the wholesale slaughter of children. It was designed for one purpose and one purpose only, to offset the same tactics that were being used by the Viet Cong.
Okay, the tactical exploitation of national capabilities and things of that nature. I would go ahead and with that, because that's what we did over in Afghanistan under the LERS.
You're making my argument, though. You understand that? You're not making your argument. You're making mine.
I'm not making an argument. What I'm trying to do, Mike, is when you make comments like that, you're belittling the efforts of not only soldiers out in the field today, but also people, men and women also, who have served honorably. And no matter what your opinion of these missions are, I'd wonder if you would be willing to state these opinions of yours that you portray as fact to the people that are serving them on the serving on the ground.
Okay. First of all, there's several things that are irritating about what you're saying. First of all, if you're a regular listener to this program, which you say you are, and I'm beginning to doubt that, and therefore I start to doubt everything you're saying. Then you know that I've said over and over and over again that I'm a supporter and a believer in the honorable traditions of the military that have been seriously screwed with for the past 100 years. Something else you can go read War is a Racket by Smedley Butler, two-time Medal of Honor winner, only soldier in U.S. history, and he reached the rank of general. Read that. Read up again on the Operation Phoenix. As far as saying this to soldiers in the field, I don't quite understand what your point is in asking me if I would say that. Given the right circumstances, if you're suggesting that I go into a battlefield situation where someone is cutting the throats of innocent civilians in order to set up a wave of terror, and if I would walk into that, I, Mike Malloy, and walk in and say, hey, what are you doing? You're doing something bad. Well, hell no. Of course I wouldn't do that. Which is not to indicate that I support what they're doing. It's to indicate that I realize a killer when I see one. And I'm not going to approach someone who's in the act or on a mission to destabilize a government, murder people, overthrow a government, assassinate elected leaders, and all the different things that have been done by members of the United States military. And as far as what I would say, you know, my question to you, if I were going to put you back on the air, which I'm not tonight, would be what your attitude is about George W. Bush, who uses the United States military like so many disposable tin soldiers, discarding them when they're broken, and sending them into missions that make absolutely no sense, have no basis in reality or truth, and taking soldiers and Marines and putting them in a situation that is based on nothing but monumental lies. Now, as far as other people in the Bush crime family who go into these operations, like, for example, Negroponte, who would never get his hands bloody, who would never pick up a weapon or put his own life at risk, but he will go in and talk to the upper level, the elites in a government, and say, this is how you set up death squads. Here's the manual. Here's how it's done. When I realize I live in a country that has done that since the Spanish-American War, and if you don't know that, you say you're cerebral. I don't know what the hell that means. But if you are not aware of the history of the abuse and misuse of the United States military, you have an awful lot of catch-up reading to do. And what I would suggest is that you do that catch-up reading, Tim, and then call me back. And we'll have a more rational discussion, because I'm not going to debate these issues with someone who doesn't know what the hell they're talking about. And you've indicated to me you don't. It's one thing to say my country right or wrong. A lot of jingoistic right-wingers say that. That's not where I come from. I say my country when it's right, and let me try to improve it when it's wrong. And if I live in a time when it's impossible to improve it because I live under a form of unique American Nazism,
then there's not much I can do except get on this radio program and every single night try to point out the things that you find offensive. And the fact that you find what I say challenging or offensive is a clear indication to me of where you stand on these issues. And it's guys like you who scare me, not physically. I'm fearless where it concerns physically, unless I have to face a special operations person in the mountains of Pakistan who is just finished decapitating somebody, and I stand up and say, hey, you shouldn't do that. You know, I may be fearless, but I'm not stupid. But the reason what you say upsets me is because you seem so willing. It is so easy for you and people like you to just slide into this my country right or wrong with the jargon that you use directly out of the counterterrorism manuals. Counterterrorism is only terrorism. It's a hyphenated form of terrorism. It's the same thing. It's exactly the same thing. You know, I'm sure your mother or your grandmother or your pastor or somebody told you those old homilies, you know, roll around with dogs, you get up with fleas. You're known by the company you keep, on and on and on and on. So if you want to justify the use of these kinds of tactics in order to preserve something that you find uniquely American, take that to someone else. Don't take it to my program, because to me that stinks. And if you show up with that, then you stink. It's that simple, pal. Scott is calling from Federal Way, Washington, listening on KPTK. Hey, Scott.
Didn't I just make that comment to you last time I talked to you about the rolling around with dogs and fleas?
You probably did. You probably did.
Just
but before, so did my grandmother long before you, pal.
Before I was going to talk about what I was going to talk about, you opened up with Dick Wilson passing. And, you know, I was just thinking, it just seems like if you look back at everybody in that generation that seemed to be born between 1910 and 1920, just about all of them are almost gone now.
That's right. That's
right.
It's
kind of sad now. I was just thinking about my grandmothers that are around that age that just passed, you know, within this year and stuff. So,
yeah.
It's just kind of. It just seems like kind of changing of the guard almost.
Yeah, it is. My mother was born in 1915 and died about, when was Kathy, 2 years ago? Three years ago, right before Molly was born. Kathy was about 7 months pregnant.
Yeah, that's when my grandmother on my father's side was born, 1915. And my grandmother on my mother's side just passed this year. She was born in 1914.
You're right. That whole generation is just about gone. You know, the World War II generation. Every once in a while you see a veteran in the 80s. What did I read the other day? We're losing World War II vets at the rate of some astronomical rate of 150 a day or 500 a week or something. It's just, pretty soon it's just going to be you and me, pal.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. But anyway, what I wanted to talk about, you know, these so-called polls. Have you ever noticed that the so-called number rating or how the candidates rank in the polls seem to correlate to the amount of money that they've raised?
Yeah, hold on. Yeah, you're right, Scott. Absolutely. Makes you wonder. Hold on, Scott. We'll come back to you in a second. This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
I'm tall, shattered and tall. Shocking to see trouble, oh, trouble move from me. I have paid my debt, now won't you leave me in my misery? Trouble, oh, trouble, please be kind. I don't want no fight, and I haven't got a lot of.
For the hour, thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered at KPHX in Phoenix, our flagship station.
also handled your calls. Billy Foster, our chat room moderator and web designer, and I know he does other things. I'm not sure what they are. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, and our executive producer, Catherine Bay. Back to Scott, who has called in from Federal Way. Thanks for holding on, Scott.
Yeah. You know,
the polls, rich people, rich candidates in the polls.
These so-called, how they seem to correlate with the numbers and stuff, and which is kind of the reason that I do not buy into it. And you know, there's something else that I've noticed is scary. I went over to whitehouseforsale.org. You know, the top two Democratic candidates, Hillary and Obama, between the two of them, you know that they have raised more money than all of the Republican candidates put together. Between them, the two of them, they have raised over $167 million.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, so if people don't think that money is not influencing politics, they're fooling themselves, and especially when it comes to Obama, which is another reason why, you know, I'm kind of very leery about this because, and I know people may think I'm racist for saying what I'm saying, but if you stop and think about it, don't you find it very suspicious that someone with practically really no experience and a black man is going to be all of a sudden that far up in the polls and people are going to be running behind them? And I'm not saying that a black man should not be a president, but, you know, this is something, and you know the situation with racism in this country. You commented on it, about it all the time yourself with the years of the hate monger radio and, you know, just the systematic of racism that's been going on. It's just something that's just very, very strange about that. I'm just not buying the numbers that they're feeding us.
Maybe it's because, I'm not going to try to analyze what you're saying, but all right, you don't have any problem with a black man being a candidate or president for that matter.
I don't have a problem with that.
Your problem is where did he get all the money? So quickly. All right. Two schools.
Well, not even that so much. I'm just saying, you know, with the state of racism and how the psyche of racism is,
right,
for him to be that far up in the, I mean, you know, we've
so
had
you,
black
you smell,
candidates.
You smell a rat.
Yeah, I just really do. And I quite personally, and this is my feeling as far as Hillary is concerned, you know, and I could be wrong, but I think she's going to have her ass handed to her in the primary.
By who?
I don't know who is going to be, but I just don't see her getting the nomination. And I could very well be wrong on that, but I've just seen.
Well, going back to why you called, the polls would indicate that while Hillary's numbers are starting to slide a little bit because Obama is making some headway, she's still a front runner, and up against any of the Republicans, she cleans their clocks. As far as Barack Obama is concerned, I understand what you're saying. You know, here's a guy that first-term senator served in the Illinois legislative branch for what, 6 years. Before that, he was a community organizer. He's a very bright guy, and maybe, just maybe, he's got a little bit of. I realize a different approach, different time, different race, different everything. But he's got a little bit of the Kennedy thing. Don't forget, one of the things that Kennedy said in his inauguration speech, and you're too young to know this, I heard it, but you can look it up. He said that the torch had been passed to a new generation born in this century. Kennedy was the first president, obviously, to be born in the 20th century. He was the first one. Now, he shares that with Barack Obama. You know, they're both born in the 20th century, obviously, but Barack Obama still has that freshness. Kennedy had a thing working against him too, and that was the fact that he was Catholic. And you know, for folks who are a little bit younger in this country, the idea of he was the second man who came very close to getting the nomination and got it. Al Smith being the other one, and he got the presidency, and who was a Catholic. And it's hard for people to understand the anti-Catholic bias that existed in this country. Part of in the 60s, part of it was in the 50s and 60s. Part of it was because the Catholics were perceived to have been supporters of Nazism. You had Father Coughlin on the radio before my time, but back in the 30s in this country, and he was like Rush Limbaugh. He was a Nazi. Period. Nazi sympathizer. So all I'm saying is that Barack Obama Well, I agree with you that there's something a little bit weird in this country, given the state of race relations. There's a term from the 60s. Given the fact that this society still is basically racist, that there is a little something suspicious on the one hand. On the other hand, maybe, just maybe, Scott, people who are polled, I don't know what they're going to do when they're going to vote, but maybe people who are polled are looking past the fact that Barack Obama is, you know, has African blood as well as some kind of white blood. I mean, this is the part that gets me. It's just like Tiger Woods. I mean, where do you stop saying that somebody is African-American when they're also Swedish-American or German-American? Or, you understand what I'm saying? The fact that both Barack Obama and Tiger Woods have nappy hair and dark skin, okay, that means they are African-American. But they also have white or Asian people in their families. So, you know, it really pisses me off. This is uniquely American. This is what we do. It's the one-drop rule. And I understand, and I got that. I got that straight years and years ago. But maybe, just maybe, Barack Obama is appealing to people on a gut level that Kennedy appealed. Young, attractive, full of ideas. You know, Kennedy was, what was Kennedy? He was a senator from Massachusetts, you know. Oh, man, I kept talked right over you. Scott, I got to go. We'll talk again, okay?
Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it. Yes, ma'am.
I was just going to say, I don't think we're ready for a president named Barack.
Well,
I think why not? If he were purple, the name would be a problem.
Well, it's his middle name that drives people crazy. I'll see you tomorrow night, Truth Seekers. Take care. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
President Cookie.